This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. DirectView LED market is crowded with companies that are all, for the most part, selling variations on the same things. Because the technology remains unfamiliar to a lot of integrators, resellers, and end users, many companies have started selling LED bundles with fixed sizes and matched components as an effort to simplify the products and the proposition. A US company called Detailed Solutions has gone down a different path, focusing mainly on custom solutions that fit the dimensions and contours of a space. They work with mainstream pro AV people at times, but they also work with architects and firms that specialize in making built spaces visually interesting. I had a good chat with Mark Van Akeren, a founding partner and a guy who has been selling LED display solutions for almost 20 years, tracking back to his time with Barco. We spoke about the company's roots, where it's focused, and cover a lot of the current trends and thinking in LED these days. Mark, thanks for joining me. Let's start out by telling me what Detailed is all about, or Detailed Solutions.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dave. Detailed Solutions is a company we started in 2016, together with Steve Samard. We've been in the LED business since the early days at Barco already. So it's in the meantime, it's over 20 years. Whereas Steve actually prior to Barco was even at Seiko, who started a little earlier. And obviously, all LED in the early days, it was. And still is an American company, Dectronics, and you had Barco, which was a market leader. You had Lighthouse, you had Seiko, and there were a few others. You didn't have the vast amount of suppliers that you currently have in the world, and most of them are Chinese, as we all know. Mm-hmm. But since the Chinese, the LED manufacturing, for the most part, moved to China, obviously, and you've seen it as well, there are lots of LED suppliers, quote unquote, out there nowadays, not necessarily owning their own manufacturing machines and facilities, and neither they do. So we started with our own brand, and what we aim to do and still do for the most part is we are not just rebranding somebody's panel, but in a lot of cases we get involved in customized solutions. So obviously that is based on existing products and existing technology, but taking the smallest common denominator, making a design happen really as close as possible to the design rather than trying to fit the design to a size of a panel. And whether that's dimensions, whether it's curves, whether it's very creative solutions. So we're not an incredibly large company, but we work with a lot of large corporate brands just because we have this experience and the knowledge. Obviously, being in the business for quite some time, and really trying to fit the solution to the design that the designers and architects come up with.
Right. So you're kind of the polar opposite of a trend that I've been seeing for the last year or so, I guess, with DirectView LED, and that a number of companies, particularly some of the larger ones, are those that have just added LED to what they already sell in terms of bundles. So they've got fixed size systems. So it's 182 inches diagonal. It comes with a mount, comes with a case, everything else, but it's meant to be kind of wheeled in and take the place of a big ass TV, where what you're doing is the complete opposite in terms of custom designs for custom jobs, right?
Yeah, really, that's our core business. Now, having said that, it doesn't mean that we cannot sell standard panels, but how do we really differentiate in that case? So right. we are looking at those solutions as well, and I think the standard solutions now, if you look at between 0.9, 1.2, or 1.5, what they're like 110 inches, 138 inches, and 165 or something, the packages mm-hmm. that you talk about. We're looking at introducing that as well, but I cannot imagine, due to our size and our, if you will, go to market distribution channel, that we're going to be most successful there. But we'll try to do that as well, to have that for certain people, because I do see and I do think that a lot of these packages, LED in general is going to be replacing on the commercial side for now. In any case, a lot of LCDs. Mm-hmm. So if anything, where we work a lot with designers and architects, as I just said, and we do a lot of creative designs and solutions. There's still a lot of clients out there that are not that familiar still with LED and just want a replacement. They know about LED and they want a replacement for the LCDs that they have. So you're not going to customize as much there. They're not getting involved with the Genslers of this world or any other architect or designer. They're more or less just wanting to buy a product that can replace their LCD.
Right. And dumb it down is one of those phrases that's a bit loaded and kind of comes across the wrong way. But really what you're trying to do is you've got some clients who just want something that's very simple so they can just put it to use, right?
Yeah, and that's a product maybe that's, or I do believe that's a product that will go through a system integration channel more than really an LED supplier. So a lot of the custom jobs that we do, we actually design the support structure as well. We share that with the clients and the designers, and we provide that and we install it as well. I don't think those packages need that kind of hand holding, if you will, and I right. think those will be great to go through system integrators, but obviously we will be one of many in that case who will do that. I mean, it's more about relationship, I would think, at some point, and obviously price as well. Although in my whole career, especially LED part of it, we realize that price is important. We want to be competitive, but that's never been the determining factor for us, for somebody to choose us or not.
Right.
I don't think there's a future in just selling on price, as we know, which is a very Chinese strategy.
Right. So you would be coming up with products that you guys are doing the reference design for, and then you're by and large going to get the packaging and everything done either in Taiwan or mainland China or somewhere else, and maybe do final assembly here, or how does all that work?
Yeah, well, we don't even do final assembly here. We basically work with a few partners where we say, okay, I know you have the range of panels. That's all great. In some cases, we might be able to use those or partly use those. But let's take these panels, or let's take these LDMs, these LED boards, and let's start changing those based on what this design really needs. So we do need some manufacturing partners that are more flexible maybe than others. We're working with some of those, their engineering team works closely together with our engineers to come up with the right solution. And it's still not rocket science really, but it does help that we have an extensive background in LED and up to board level know what the difference is and can help with that. So to give you an idea, somebody close to you, I think, I don't know if you know him, Cyril Bem. He used to be the technical director for Solotech. He's a great engineer, been very long in the business. He works with us, but also Robbie Tielemans, who used to be the CTO for Barco and basically the inventor of LED at Barco. So we have, and I am most likely the least knowledgeable person in the company, which is a good thing, but we have quite some knowledge within the company to be able to work on these solutions.
Right. You work both in indoor and outdoor display?
We do, although due to the work that we've done, the reference that we have, and the people we work with, we gravitate way more to indoor projects and really high resolution. So we nowadays, when we started, 4mm didn't even exist, and I think we started with a 14mm, which was a what they called a virtual 7, and then at some point a year or 2 years later, 6 came out, and another year 4 came out, and nowadays for us 4 is low resolution. For indoor, to be honest, even outdoor, we don't see a lot of ourselves. We either are very high resolution, so whereby 4 is the lowest and then going down, or it's more creative and it really is a lower resolution, a 30 or an 80 or 50, not so much in a panel, but with pixel strings or strips or anything like that.
Hmm. And what are some of the projects that people who are listening would know, they'd have some top of mind familiarity with?
Well, quite a few of our projects are corporate, with corporate clients. So they wouldn't know all of them immediately if they went in. But we've done all the LED, or most of the LED, not all the LED. Some was older already at the New York Stock Exchange. So mm-hmm. We did custom arches there, the screen behind the balcony where the bell's being rung every day.
Yeah.
That's our screen, which can open, moves, and we're actually over the weekend installing more screens at NYSE. We recently did a ticker, the new Krispy Kreme store in Times Square, which was a completely custom designed ticker. There's a very large board above it, which I think is an electronics display. But the more creative part again there is something we did. We work a lot of with MasterCard for a lot of their offices, putting in a lot of screens there. We've put in screens at headquarters at YouTube, Instagram. What we do as well, we do quite a bit of cruise line work, which in a way is a niche market, if you will, within the overall LED market. But we've done quite a few ships, and a lot of times, again, the indoor side. So a lot of the theaters, etc. And we recently, and the ship is not in operation yet, we did the latest ship for Carnival Cruise Lines. When I can share it, or when we have good pictures, if you will, we will share it for sure. We've made complete custom displays that can rotate 360 degrees. They can move up and down, and they would, if they're all coming together, they would completely cover the wall, the glass wall. In the atrium, but at the same time, if they don't use the screens, they can move away, and it's a complete big glass wall that people can see the ocean.
Yeah, I've seen a number of cruise ships lately that seem to have this as kind of part of their wow factor, you know, that this is the thing that gets their people excited about being on that particular ship versus another.
Yeah, it used to be you needed to have a pool, and then they added, because we did that, I think, in 2003 already. We were the first one to add an outdoor screen besides the pool, so they could have movies at night. Pretty low resolution still in those days. But nowadays, any cruise ship will have a theater with a big backdrop, and it's quite a production that they have. And they have more and more creative solutions with LED in general on the different ships.
It sounds like you guys have found inroads into a lot of work by going through or working with some of the companies who you mentioned, the architects, the visual space designers, like the Genslers and those kinds of companies. Is that being something that just happened, or was it a strategy?
No, that is a strategy, and you're absolutely right. We work quite a bit with system integrators, but in a different way than probably some of our colleagues do. A lot of times we get involved a little bit earlier, and we try to be as well within the design. So we can help there with the design. We can make sure that even when they're still, before they're building the building, that everything is prepared for all the visual displays that go in there as well. So we do work quite a bit with the design teams of Ted and Hush and Gensler, and Gensler obviously has lots of different offices. And then we, after, in a way, we're part of the project. We work closely together with system integrators. So lots of times we still go through a system integrator at that point. Although the LED part, typically, we still most of the time install that as well.
Is it a different ecosystem than the traditional Pro AV ecosystem? I'm thinking in terms, first of all, of obviously the architects and designers like the Genslers and so on. They're not really sort of part of the same crowd as an Infocom crowd. They may show up and all that, but there's also sort of high-end AV consultants that aren't really like normal integrators. They do museums and things like that. Are those the kinds of people you're working with?
We are at times, obviously not with all of them, and that's not that's not by choice. It's not like we don't want to work with them, but
sure.
But at the same time, we do work with them. At the same time, you see certain system integrators taking on that role as well. System integrators that move more into towards a design aspect of a project or a consultancy role. So in that case, we certainly work closely together with them. What we don't do as much, and that's not because we don't want to, we're probably not very good at that yet, is basically setting up a sales channel purely through distributors. Mm-hmm. whereby we say, hey, this is the list price and you're our gold partner, the way Barco used to work in the old days with box moving with just products, because we view it, and what we do, we view it more as a solution sale than a product sale. And so it makes it a little bit harder, and also we are not obviously somebody, a system integrator that's large enough as a diversified or anybody like that. They will they work with US partners as well, but they also work directly with the Chinese manufacturers. A manufacturer from China will always be cheaper than a supplier in the US that actually gets their manufacturing from China.
It's been my perspective that LED is getting mainstream to a level that you now have architects and people who think about designing a big space that they're thinking about LED as an architectural finish. Is that an accurate perception?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I see the same thing, and I think we mentioned them. Obviously, Gensler is by far the largest architectural firm in the world. I mean, they have all the different offices. They have what they call the DXD teams and the digital experience design teams. And although it's not always only LED, sometimes it's other, maybe more lighting aspects or other technologies. But technology is definitely an integrated part of architectural design nowadays. And to give you an example, we've done, I started at some point before we started Detailed Solutions, worked for VER and started Advantage Solutions there, which was basically the sales and fixed installation part of VER. And we worked quite a bit through ESI design, and Diversified was involved as well with a REIT, REIT, right, and a real estate investment company that would hire ESI to design visual displays into a building, spend whatever amount it was, a couple of million on it, and then sell the building. So it was a 600 million building, maybe, or I'm a real estate expert, say between 500 million and $1 billion building. They would spend a couple of million in LED and to make it nice, and they would sell the buildings. So it almost was an investment tool for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've certainly heard from the ESIs and others that it's also a way to recruit tenants and a way to hang on to tenants if you're not selling the building. It's just like, people want to be in this cool space. And I think that still applies even with workplaces changing pretty dramatically in the past year.
Right. Yeah, that will be an interesting trend to see what is going to happen. Obviously, people are going to buildings again. They aren't going to work together again. But Employers have seen that people can actually work from home, that there's maybe a healthy mix between going to an office and people working remotely. So I wonder what that means in the end for office buildings and such.
Yeah, I think the Class A office towers, the buildings that people really want to be in, that's where they want to have their office to show off, even if it's a third of the size they might have originally intended it to be. They're still going to want to be in those buildings, and the property owners are still going to have to compete with things like flashy lobbies and everything else. But if you're in a B or a C building, then I would not want to be in the property business right now.
No, or the retail for that matter. There's quite a few of our colleagues, I think, that focus a lot on digital sign and retail. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if they have to pivot a little bit to some other markets.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
LED's been around for a whole bunch of years, obviously, but it's really been in the last, let's say, 3 to 4 years when it's really sort of found its way into digital signage in a big way and being actively used. What are you finding in terms of marketplace demand now, particularly for the interior stuff? I've heard the sweet spot is probably 2.5 millimeters in terms of pixel pitch, but I'm curious if that's changed.
We do a lot more 1.2 and 1. Between 1.2 and 1.8. So 1.2, 1.5, 1.8. We haven't done a lot of 2.5 or 2.9 or anything like that. We've done some of them, but it seems like the higher the resolution gets in terms of offering. So now we're looking at what 0.6 already, 0.7, there's 0.8, mm-hmm. 0.9. Even though it does not necessarily make sense, not from economic perspective, and also not what the client wants to do with the LED, there's still the trend where they say, "Oh, I want a higher resolution." Well, what's your content going to be? Where are people going to watch it from, et cetera? So you really don't need this resolution. No, I want the higher resolution. Mm-hmm. And we see, and granted, we might not be the market leader there, but we see a stronger and stronger push to higher resolutions. And it probably makes sense, especially if you start looking at, on the commercial side, if LCD is going to be replaced more and more with LED, you need to go to higher resolutions, obviously, to at least try and match the resolution somewhat.
Are you seeing much demand for super high resolution stuff like micro LED?
It's starting to come, yes. Where people were talking about a 0.9 and they knew it was out there, we're starting to install 0.9 now. And 1.2 almost seems a standard resolution. So 1.2 is still SMD. 0.9 becomes micro LED or mini LEDs or anything like that. And I see a trend going in that direction, yes.
And do you think that all the buyer interest based around resolution is really a function of how LED has been marketed for the last 2-3 years, where, everything seems to be a race around pixel pitch as opposed to some of the other things that are arguably more important?
Yeah, I think so. I would agree with that. I think, though, in combination with the fact that there's more and more 4K content out there as well, and if somebody's going to invest in a technology that has a pretty long lifespan, that they say, okay, then I might as well immediately go to 4K rather than focusing on the 2K that I currently have, maybe, but because I know a year from now, 2 years from now, all our stuff is going to be 4K. And obviously, it's not just LED. There's a lot of peripheral technology around as well, which is going to 4K. So I think that's part of it as well.
Mm-hmm. One of the revelations I had at the last trade show I went to, which was way back in ISE more than a year ago now, was bumping into an old industry friend, actually yet another Barco person, and having a chat with him and seeing a display maybe 40 feet away and asking him, oh, what is that? Is that like a 1.9 or a 1.5 or something like that? And he said, no, it was a 4mm. And I said, whoa. And he explained that it was all around the video processing. And he worked for a company that had, you know, custom video processing software and boxes that did that stuff. Is that kind of a hidden, somewhat forgotten, important element of large format video walls?
I still think that the content part is still undervalued a lot of times, that people focus on the LED and the cost of the LED and the resolution and obviously the size without having a comprehensive plan on how to use it. And in the end, as we both know, I rather have really good content on bad quality LED than the other way around. Because content makes it look really good. And I'm pretty sure with respect to resolution and pixels that you can play with, as soon as you can create your content in the exact pixel resolution of the display you have there, whether it's not an exactly a 1080p or a 4K, but if you can create your content exactly in the resolution that's there, so no downscaling or upscaling, it will look as a higher resolution screen. It will look really good. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of times people are focused on, we need the highest resolution, but with the right processing and with the right content, you absolutely don't need that.
Yeah, I see a number of offers where they're just using like a regular media playout box, and then you've got this oddball resolution and everything. And I'm just thinking, is this really optimizing what you've got?
Well, obviously not.
Yeah.
they probably spent their money maybe on the screens already, and not always, but a lot of times we still see it's an afterthought on what to use the LED screen for and what you're going to use to put content on the LED screen. And you spend $1 million on LED, and then you're not getting the right front end equipment, and it's not going to make your LED screen look better.
Yeah, you're scouring around your computer directories looking for a video file to run on the thing.
Yeah, exactly. Or can we repurpose some of the commercials or the ads we already have, some of the content we already have?
Yeah, even though the shape is wrong. One of the trends that I've seen in recent years, and I've had some good long discussions with folks, is this idea of how do you protect the displays if they're in an indoor environment and they're within reach of human beings? And there have been these glue-on-board displays, or what a guy from Nanolumens more effectively coined as engineered coatings that protect the displays. What do you guys think of that stuff? Are you using it?
I have a few thoughts on that. One, as I said, we started selling LED in 2000, and I think in 2002 or so, you got the SMDs and the indoor displays. Off the top of my head, in 20 years, I cannot remember anybody really breaking an LED wall that was installed in a public place, even SMD. And mind you, if people really wanted to break something, it almost doesn't matter what you do to the screen, because vandalism is vandalism. Mm-hmm. So I haven't seen, the only thing I've seen is we've put screens on the Blue Man Group, and they throw blue paint during their show, and they throw it all over the LED wall, and they didn't realize that wasn't a good idea to throw blue paint on the LED wall.
Story.
Yeah. So, but having said that, we've enabled some GOB displays as well, and we're not really doing that anymore because it's very hard. It's not that hard to have a good GOB display and have the coding on there for smaller displays. As soon as the display becomes larger, it's very hard for manufacturing to maintain a very uniform overall quality of the coding. And some of the leaders in our technology, and for instance, Roe is one of them, would tell you the same, that they didn't go through with that either anymore because of the difficulties and larger quantities to get very even uniform coding.
And the second thing they could use it more than anybody, really. If you're Roe, you're doing like temporary and live events.
All the rental, exactly, which is thrown around every day, every week. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, when we installed it, and there was a little bit at some point with the Sony CLED had that as well. As soon as you have or any coding, it's not so much about Sony or what or any other company. If you put a coding on there, it becomes very reflective.
Oh yeah.
And if you have darker or lower brightness content on there, and you cannot control the light around you, or there's some daylight coming from one section, it looks horrible. The screen might be great, and if you have it full brightness and a lot of bright colors, you don't see it, but the reflection is pretty high, which doesn't make it typically a good looking screen. So the next thing is what you can use mini LED as well, which doesn't really have the coding like GOB, but is already a lot stronger. And then the next thing where people will say, oh, what about the chip on board then? That's even stronger without the actual coding and everything like that. So I think they're stronger and stronger solutions. I think the biggest problem always was with SMD and with the small chips is during install, that it was easy if you put them down wrong or people didn't handle them carefully and put panels next to each other that you would pop out an LED. Once an LED is installed in a public place, I have not seen a lot of vandalism. And I'm sure somebody can tell me, hey, Mark, we've had it here or there. I believe you, but I have not seen a lot of vandalism. I don't think any of our clients has ever called us and say, hey, people broke our screen.
Yeah, I've seen it, but it's special circumstances. I've seen it surrounding an ATM machine in a transit station that gets 100,000 people a day, and just inadvertent bumps and scrapes and everything. It's got beat up, but I worry about things like public concourses where you've got a 60-foot stretch with this big long video wall and people walking along with their roller bags and everything.
Yeah, they're typically, and I agree, but they're typically, that's even in corporate hallways, a design or an architect would build in something that protects a little bar along the side or anything like that, because it's the same in corporate buildings that get cleaned every day. And at night they come by with the vacuum cleaners and whatever equipment they use, and they can bang into these walls as well if they're not careful.
All right, last question. When you are working with a new account or a new prospect account, what's that first question that you ask them, other than do you have budget?
No, we don't really even ask do you have budget. we typically ask them what they're trying to do exactly with the LED screen, and what they're trying to accomplish, and what their goal is in the design, and also how they want to use it, because that will allow us a lot of times to consult on resolution and technology, etc. And from there we can then come up and obviously there's the front access, the space that is there, etc., because as I said, we design a lot of times the structures for the displays as well. So that's typically the questions that we ask somebody, and when we have those answers, we can sort of tailor our proposal, and obviously we'll find out pretty quickly if somebody has a budget or not. It's typically the people that come to you and say, can you give me a price for anything from a 1.2 to a 10 millimeter? I say, well, then you have no idea what you're trying to do yet. So that's typically not the client or the project that moves ahead, because they have no idea on what costs are or even what they want to use.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mark, that was a great conversation. I really appreciate you spending some time with me.
Absolutely.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.